Insurance isn't one size fits all. That's why drivers have enjoyed Progressive's Name Your Price tool for years now. With the Name Your Price tool, you tell them what you want to pay, and they'll show you options that fit your budget. So whether you're picking out your first policy or just looking for something that works better for you and your family, they make it easy to see your options. Visit Progressive.com. Find a rate that works for you with the Name Your Price tool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a brand new best podcast in baseball. The Cardinals swept the series in Houston, and that's invited a whole lot of questions, starting with, are they better than expected? Are they actually going to be good? I'll get into it with Brandon Kiley of 101 ESPN in this new best podcast in baseball. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by Brandon Kiley of 101 ESPN, co-host of BK and Ferrario, also part of the Redbird Report podcast there, and also, like, I get to join you weekly this year, so this is good. This is kind of a flip of the script, though. I get to ask you questions as you're on my show now.
It'll be great. I'm really looking forward to this, Derek. Been looking forward to doing something like this for a really long time. So we are thrilled we get to do the weekly conversations with Derek this year. You can, if you want to, you can hear them Tuesdays on BK in Ferrario as long as the schedule permits for that. So we're thrilled with how that's gone so far, and I'm looking forward to doing this with you.
Yeah, this is going to be great. I think this is, and it comes at a good time. The Cardinals are in the midst of a road trip. When we're recording this, I'm in Miami awaiting the start of the road trip here. My colleague just covered a series sweep in Houston. First time they've gone into Houston and swept a three-game series since those titanic years of 04, when you know they were bound to meet in the NLCS, those two teams. Certainly times have changed. Leagues have changed. Logos have changed. Uniforms have changed, all on one side, not on the other side. But what did you make of that series? And as this week begins with Miami on deck, how buoyant should Cardinal fans be, Brandon?
I think you can be as excited about this as you want to be. And let me explain what I mean by that. I personally do not believe what's happening right now is sustainable as like a playoff contending caliber team. I have thought all along, though, that this is a team that is not your typical tank, right? I don't think they're going to win 65 games. I never felt that way. I thought they had major league caliber players. And Derek, I grew up in Kansas City. I've seen a lot of teams that did not have a whole lot of major league caliber players that find their way to like 65 to 70 wins over the course of the season. This is not that. This is a capable, decent, solid roster. So I do think they are better than a lot of the pessimists thought coming into the season. That being said, they do a lot of the little things really, really well. And that's the thing that has stood out to me so far is when you have a young team the way that the Cardinals are, those are typically the things that get a little lost in the shuffle. They'll have their moments where they're hitting for power. They'll have their moments where you see the strikeout stuff with your pitching staff, whatever it may be. But for this team, much of the way that they've won this year, maybe basically up until this Houston series, was they were doing all of the little things well. They were one of the most productive teams when it came to like sacrifice hits, sacrifice bunts. They were one of the best teams at moving runners over and then eventually getting them in. Mm-hmm. And that's a very important skill to have in your toolbox. It is also the kind of skill that over 162 I think is limited in terms of its ceiling. I do think eventually they are going to need more power than what they have as a roster. I think eventually the lack of swing and miss will show up and you won't just be, you know, the best defensive team in Major League Baseball by a wide margin over 162. So I think there are flaws that will show up, but hey man, if you're somebody that's optimistic right now, they're 13-8. They've given you reason to believe. And you can have fun watching this. That's what baseball's supposed to be for, is to enjoy the games as they're taking place. And this has been a heck of a lot more fun than I think most expected it to be.
I'm glad you brought up the fact that like the things that they do well over the course of a season is not enough to elevate a team. Eventually, talent catches up, pitching catches up, power catches up. I'm reminded of something that we would hear often from Tony La Russa during spring training. about how he wanted the team ready for April and not getting ready in April. And his point was that there were wins to be had in April that would benefit a team later in September, because other teams were still finding themselves. Other teams were still kind of getting ready in April. Other teams were not quite as sharp with their timing or their speed of game or their execution. And so his point was, there are games on the table that a team that executes well can take in April that will benefit them later. And I think that's what we're seeing. I think we're seeing a Cardinals team that is taking games from other clubs, maybe even more talented clubs, because of their execution. You know, they lead the majors in bases taken. You mentioned Victor Scott has more sacrifice hits than any other team. You know, I think that's that, or at least that was the case 2 weeks in. You know, you're exactly right. So I think what we're seeing is, and that's actually a compliment. This is a team that's playing sharp enough out of the gate to steal wins that other teams are letting them take. And that's not to imply that the Cardinals aren't going out, that they're passive in this. They are very aggressive in taking these wins, but they're -8 in run differential. They're defying, they're unbeaten in extra innings. You know, these are things that over the course of a season, if you defy those, then you're the outlier. Eventually they catch up with you. Eventually that runner on second to start extra innings, you know, you're going to happen into a loss. Eventually the run differential cannot be overcome and your pitching is thin and it craters with a losing streak that undoes your winning streak.
What is the thing for you that leaves the most to be desired in terms of where the Cardinals are at compared to a contender? Because, like, I'll just mention for me, I look at that swinging strike rate right now, and it's not just from the rotation, just overall for the pitching staff. It is the worst of any pitching staff in the last decade right now. They're at a 7.5% swinging strike rate so far this season. Now, I think that will naturally progress over the course of the season. I don't think they're going to be there all year long, but right now I think it's indicative of kind of who they are as a staff, where they don't have a whole lot of that. They're waiting for guys underneath to become that for them at the major league level, but for right now you don't have them. So that's the thing to me that contenders have that you do not. Do you see something different that would make you, like, if you're looking at this through the lens of what would prevent them from being a contender, the thing that leaves the most to be desired right now?
Yeah, I think I want to be consistent with this, and I think it's the offense. I mean, it takes too many things to go right for them to score a bunch of runs. The Houston series notwithstanding, they got home runs, they got bases clearing doubles, but these are the things that they need. You know, a lot of times we saw that offense during that homestand. I mean, they went a really, eight consecutive home games where it was three or fewer runs. And to score three or fewer runs, they did so in two ways. One, Jordan Walker hit a solo home run, or two, they strung together three hits of some type, either a single, sacrifice hit, a double, something. But it took three things. And every time you are stacking on how many things you need to go right, the probability of it diminishes, right? And so, you know, I think it's a question during spring was, how is this group going to score runs? I think it remains a question here as you kind of get into late April. How is this group going to score runs? Jordan Walker has emphatically said, I'm going to help score runs, but he can't do it alone, and the league is going to adjust to him. Power has to come from somewhere else. You know, I know that they feel they're a death by a thousand paper cuts offense, but just the probabilities of that, it makes it very difficult to do that on a recurring basis. And it makes it very unlikely that they score 5 runs, 7 runs, 9 runs, if that's what they're counting on, just because the level of competition is so good. Defense is so good. Other teams have that strike and miss, which is exactly what you're talking about. That can just unplug a rally really quick if you need multiple hits to pull it off. And that puts such a strain then on the pitching and, you know, the cascade effect from there. I really think that, like, over the course of this season, the question isn't will they score runs? It's how do they score runs? You know, they're not going to be a high scoring juggernaut, old school American League power team. But they can score runs. It's just, how are they going to do it consistently? They need guys on base a lot, They need some of these guys on base more. They need Victor Scott to steal. They need to get things in motion. And then they have to have some other power component emerge. And that's a lot to ask of this roster at the moment.
I find this offense to be really fascinating, Derek, because, I mean, you mentioned Jordan Walker and the start to the season that he had. And mm-hmm. we've seen it. He's got this hitting streak going right now. And it reminds me so much, Derek, not the beginning of it, but like where we're at right now. It reminds me so much of his rookie season, mm-hmm. where the hitting streak itself is masking some of the issues that are starting to show up. I'm not overly worried about it right now, but some of the tendencies from years past are starting to show up again right now. He is mm-hmm. chasing a little bit more often. He is swinging and missing a little bit more often. The power that you saw seemingly every game early in the season is now showing up a little bit more sporadically. And so that's going to happen for any major leaguer. Mike Trout has his slumps, right? Shohei Ohtani has his slumps. It's about how short can you make those slumps? How quickly can you adjust to the way that the rest of Major League Baseball is pitching you? And for the Cardinals, that means other guys are going to have to step up. So mm-hmm. can J.J. Weatherholtz take this offense and run with it for a couple of weeks? Can Alec Burleson get going? Can Ivan Herrera start hitting for power again? Are they going to have that stretch of games where Nolan Gorman, we've seen it in the past, he's a very frustrating offensive player, but there will be a month at some point this year, if they continue playing him every day, where he hits, you know, seven home runs in a 20-game stretch. That's just the kind of player that he has been for most of his major league career. So I find them to be really interesting, Derek, as an offense, because I do think they are very limited. They have more guys, though, than I expected that I think have the potential to carry the offense for a week or two at a time. And that makes them pretty interesting to me.
So who are those guys? Like, if who could get hot enough on this team? Like, Gorman has that streakiness. Yeah. Okay. Walker has done it here this year. And done it for a week. Who's somebody else? You think Burleson is that guy?
I think Burleson can. I think Herrera is a guy who I just think he's a really good hitter, man.
He's a very good hitter. Yeah.
I think what we've seen from him early on this year is so wildly impressive. He had 18 walks, Derek, in his first 18 games of the season. The mm-hmm. last Cardinal to do that was Albert Pujols in 2006. And the reason I find it so instructive on who he is as a hitter is because, like, he had to do that. They were not pitching him in the zone because they wanted everybody else in the lineup to beat them. They were not going to allow Ivan Herrera to do it. And so a lot of the times, especially with a young player, the way that you see that is, all right, well, they're not going to give me anything inside of the zone. I've got to start chasing so that way I can do my damage. I can make my mark on these games. But Herrera stayed disciplined. He said, if they're not going to throw me anything in the zone, I'm just not going to swing. I'm going to allow that to be my contribution for the offense. I will be on base 40% of the time, even though I'm averaging 200 on the season. And that's a pretty incredible thing for a young player to have the discipline to do. And now I think we're going to start to see that creep up in terms of the average. And when you start to reach, you've talked about this a lot. You see the on-base percentage as almost like a flotation device. It can help boost your OPS over the course of a season. And I think he's one of those guys that no matter how low the average is at any given time, he's always going to have a good OPS because of what he's able to do with the OBP. So I found his start to the season wildly impressive, not to the same level as Walker, but honestly kind of similar, but in a very different way.
You put that far better than I usually do it, because I call it a low calorie batting average or a high calorie batting average. You put it far better with a flotation device. It's a very like positive spin. I'm more like the grumbly, sinister, like, you know, sarcastic low calorie batting average when a guy doesn't walk enough. So that brings me to, can I put you on the spot? You ready for a quiz here?
Okay, I love it. Yeah.
Okay. Does Jordan Walker have more home runs or more walks this month?
Oh, man. My guess is home runs, because I know he's still in like the bottom 15 percentile this year in strikeout rate and swinging strike rate. So I'll say home runs.
He has 7 home runs, 5 walks this month. In this season, does he have more home runs or more walks?
He did not get off to the same hot start, so I'll go walks over homers.
It's the same, 8 and 8. And I bring that up because I think it's really interesting, particularly, and we didn't rehearse this, particularly in the way you described Herrera, right? Herrera is finding his walks and teams are clearly like, you're not going to beat us. What we've seen after Jordan went on his power binge is teams are going to adjust. And the next phase for him is taking walks. That's going to be a real big sign of where he's at as a hitter, is as pitchers go, well, we'll go up high or we'll go away and we're just not going to be in the zone. Will you take the walk? And once he starts doing that, then they have to come back in the zone. They have to come back towards him. And then we'll see if he can start elevating those pitches, or he'll definitely hit them hard because that's what he does. And, you know, but there'll be better pitches for him to go after. And that's really kind of the next phase of his kind of cycle as a hitter, cycle of the season. It's not, I guess it falls under the big silo of adjustments that we talk about. It is definitely that, is as teams go, well, we'll go out to the zone, outside the zone, to see if you'll get yourself out or if you see if you get some meat contact. He'll probably still hit some balls hard that are out of the zone just because the nature of his swing and his strength. But that walk number has to climb for him to do damage. And I know that seems counterintuitive, right? You don't think of like walks feeding slugging, but if he takes walks, that'll be a sign of the slugging returning.
It's kind of similar. Now, they're very different stylistically as hitters, but it kind of reminds me of the Burleson test where that first year he was so overly aggressive because he's like, I can hit anything. And the Cardinals came back to him and they're like, yeah, you can make contact against any pitch in or out of the zone, but you can't do damage against any pitch. And what we need you to do is hone in your strike zone. So when you make the contact, you're hitting a bunch of doubles. You're able to have that power that we crave in our lineup, and it's going to make you a better overall hitter. We understand you can chase and you can make contact with anything. You're a good bad ball hitter, but we want you to be a great in the zone hitter. And that's where you're going to be able to do your best stuff. And that's the next step for Walker now, is lay off of that stuff. It, low and away, he's done better this year against it. It's not perfect, but it's better. And now you've got to do that for everything. And this is where baseball is so hard, is they're always going to find the next thing. They're always going to see, all right, what if we do this? How's he going to react to that? And then once you find a way to react to it appropriately, they'll go for the next thing. And it's just this constant cat and mouse game. And for Walker, he's passed the first test and he passed it with flying colors. And it's been 3 years since we've seen that. So that is a huge boost for him. It's already a successful start. Now it's about, what can you do next for me? Because baseball is an ever-evolving game, and you're an eighth of the way through the season, and you got a long way to go, man. You can have 25, 30 home runs this year if you're able to make the adjustments, but now it's about going out there and making those adjustments that are necessary, the way Burleson did last year, to become a legit productive major league hitter.
Yeah, I think in the early goings, you make a great point about how teams have clearly taken notice of Herrera. Jordan Walker has gotten attention because, you know, of the damage he's done. You know, I think Burleson has the ability to get the attention of opponents. So that's three guys right in a row that the Cardinals have that could kind of buoy an offense, right? That could kind of lift an offense by saying, all right, we can do this. But one thing about the modern game is that teams will go like, we'll give you your singles. We'll just let you have them because, again, they can't – it's hard to add up. I mean, I haven't talked with one – pitcher the other day, and he was saying, like, if I look at it this way, like, you got to get three singles off of me to get a run, I'm winning. Like, how do you get three singles in a row off of me if that's what it takes? And it's like, well, that's the Cardinals offense a lot of times. So you know, and he's thinking that that's his equation to win. So how does that, you know, if you think about it through the offense line, that's not the equation to produce a lot of runs. But like, there is another way to go about this where it could be beneficial to the Cardinals, like in the sense that, I mean, and I mean this in their singles, is one of the ways that hitters are protected isn't what's behind them, it's what's in front of them. And, you know, Jordan Walker, I mentioned the walks. That's going to be something that he has to really add to his game here. But one way his teammates could help in this regard is be on base ahead of him. Make it so there's nowhere for him to go. And so the pitchers do have to challenge him. The same is said for Burleson, right? If you get a spot where he is hitting with runners on base a lot and they have to come into the zone because they don't want to walk him and then face Jordan with nowhere to put him. But then that's the type of area where Burleson can be like, okay, I'm going to do damage. I'm not just going to take the single that they're going to give me, because the teams will let you we'll take your single. That's why we see all types of hitters who might hit for, like Luis Arraez is a great example. Teams will be like, all right, cool, go get your hits. That's fine. Go get your hits, you know, but you're going to be on first and you're going to be stranded on second, right? The Cardinals, by having guys who get on base in that one or two spot, and Weatherholt's done fine and Herrera's done well, they can preemptively add that protection to then kind of unlock some of the damage in the offense. That's an area of growth for them. It's not quite there yet, but that's something that has to change for them to sustain offense.
I'm in full agreement with you. And one of the things that I would love to see more of from this offense, and it's not just like a magic, you can hit a button and suddenly the doubles machine is there, but I want to see more doubles from this team, Derek.
Yeah.
Super athletic. They should be a line drive hitting team. I think they've got players in their lineup that's yes. The way that they should be producing. Like JJ Weatherholt, that guy should be a line drive hitter that's hitting for, you know, a ton of doubles over the course mm-hmm. of the season. He only has one so far this year. He's young. I'm not worried about this, but when the Cardinals are at their best as an offense, I think that is where a lot of their extra base hits are going to be coming. They're not your traditional hitting for a boatload of homers over the course of the year, but they should be able to get after it with doubles. And the other thing that I would like to see more of, and this is as much a conversation about Victor Scott as it is anybody else, but they've got to start stealing more bases. If you're not going to be a power hitting team, you've got to manufacture that slug in other ways. And that means taking the extra bases the way that they have, going from first to third, right? Having productive outs. All of that stuff is important. Another thing that would be helpful is getting a runner into scoring position without the need of that extra hit. You mentioned having multiple singles in a row. It's hard to do, but you know what would be great? If you can get that guy on first with a single or a walk, then he bumps himself over to second base. And now that single that you're talking about, because of the speed that this team has on it, that guy might score with a hard hit single to the outfield because he's standing on second. And the team that I would kind of harken this back to is Milwaukee in recent seasons. They are not a team that is overly powerful as a lineup. They have a few guys that can hit for power, but they hit a ton of doubles and they steal like crazy when they get on the base paths. They are wildly athletic. And much like the Cardinals, they are also very good defensively. So they do all of those little things well. Now, they also have had a monster or two at the front end of their rotation. That's a different conversation on the pitching side of things. But as an offense, the way that they are able to stay productive, stolen bases and doubles, and making sure they get those guys into scoring position without needing somebody else to move them over. And that's something that this Cardinals team just really hasn't shown so far.
Yeah. I mean, I always try to, I'm glad you were doubles or damage. Doubles are damage. And if there's a ballpark, you know, if there's a thing that Busch Stadium offensively invites, it's doubles, both of the gap variety and of the speed variety. There's a lot of different ways for a guy to get to second base that are not just, you know, splitting the gap and getting the ball to the wall. Speed can do it too, base running awareness. This actually, some of the things the Cardinals do really well lends itself to, there should be more doubles. You're exactly right. And doubles are damage. That's definitely a way to look at it. You know, I think you bring up pitching and it's probably good to, has there been a pitching performance that has stood out to you or two?
Dustin May's third start, I thought was impressive just because of the amount of adjustments that we saw going into that game. I would say that's probably the one on the starting pitching side of things that has stood out basically every
maybe in
time,
both directions, right? Like for how how much he struggled, that was like what happened from spring to the regular season and then the turnaround.
And then on the bullpen side, I mean, I think every Cardinals fan has had the same reaction. What we've seen from Riley O'Brien has been tremendous. I mean, that guy, every time he takes the mound, I'm impressed by the kind of stuff that he has. So those would probably be the two, for better and for worse, on the Dustin May side of things. Those are the two guys that have really stood out. If you want to go on the negative side, there are others, but we can start with the positive if you prefer.
Well, yeah, no, that's a good one because, okay, in both of those cases, let's just like, I'm gonna get right to the point and ask you a difficult question. All right, you ready? Okay, so Dustin May, Riley O'Brien, both very productive. Let's say get into July, the Cardinals are about where they are right now. Do the Cardinals keep their eye on the ball, and do they trade both of them? Not just one of them, both of them. Do they entertain offers for a Riley O'Brien?
So this is something that I was going to ask you about coming off of the initial question that we started with, which is like, how do you view this? They're 13-8, they're second in the division. Right now they're in whatever you want to consider to be the playoff race, right? We're so early in the season. I don't know if such a thing exists, but they're there if you want to call it that.
Yes.
So I have heard all offseason Heim Bloom talk about how they will not be going against their long-term plans. They will stay disciplined no matter the situation. And that means giving guys a little bit of extra leash. Like right now, you're seeing it in the bullpen where they're giving guys some extra leash to find out, can they figure this out? Matt Swanson, in a different year, is probably sent down by now. And he's replaced because he clearly needs to get stuff right. You look at the lineup right now, like they're sticking with Nolan Gorman because it is time to find out what he has as a hitter. It is time to stick with him to see, is there anything more here? Also, he's been good defensively, but let's set that aside. On this specific question, I think if you're staying disciplined and given what I said at the beginning, where I don't think this is a legitimate playoff team, I think that's exactly what you do. Is you trade Dustin May at the trade deadline, and you trade Riley O'Brien at the trade deadline, and you trade Jojo Romero at the deadline. And if Swanson becomes the 2025 version of himself, you probably trade him too. And I know that sounds like a lot, and it sounds like you're selling on the season and you're just like kicking the can down to 2027, but that's exactly what I think they should be doing this season. They signed Dustin May to trade him. And I think that was both sides entering that agreement with the same understanding together. Riley O'Brien, if he's really good this year, that's great. Guess what? Next year, he could be Matt Swanson. Next year, he could be Ryan Fernandez. So on these bullpen arms, it is always my opinion, when you're in the midst of a retool, rebuild, whatever, you sell them at their peak performance to get the maximum return. And then you try to develop the next guy. Right. And you've got guys coming through the system right now that could become that. Maybe the player that they just got is the player to be named later in the deal they made in the offseason with Boston for Sonny Gray. Mm-hmm. Maybe that guy can become your next Swanson or your next Riley O'Brien. But to me, the answer is very clearly you've got to trade these guys at their maximum value. And if that's this season, it stinks, but you got to do it.
I would strike two notes of caution. One with Swanson, you have so many more years of control of him that he might yet be a closer. And so his value might be higher than a setup guy. And he also might be part of a team that contends because you have so many out years, you know, and he has that kind of stuff. We'll see if it emerges, but you know, we've all seen closers come out of nowhere. We've seen closers with that same kind of stuff. And it wouldn't be a surprise at all if they pit Graceffo against Swanson for the ninth inning of 2027. That is something that you could definitely see happening. So I would put that one note that you may not get the highest return on him, but he also might have more value because he's so close and you're not turning to like the Cade Winquist to be that guy. And that brings me to the second thing, which is a great conversation to have, I think, which is how much do you pull away from a bullpen when a young team needs some positive reinforcement? If you have a young team that goes out and gets a lead, one of the probably more detrimental things that can happen is to constantly lose that lead. Because you figure those leads are going to be rare and those wins are going to be rare. And then having the gut punch of having them blown so often makes even the winning less likely. And I do think that there's some element there that a team, even a rebuilding team, has to be aware of, that if it has a lead, because those are not going to be that often, having a bullpen that can close it out for a win can be a force multiplier as far as the positivity for both the team itself, but also, and this is the bigger question, the fan base. It'll be very fascinating, Brandon, and I'd love to hear how you'd approach this. If they play well up through, say, Flag Day, right? Say they're still five games above 500 on Flag Day, and all the talk is like, well, this team is outplaying expectations. Well, you know, ticket sales are outdoing expectations. There's actually kind of some vibe about this team because of the style of play or the personalities. J.J. Weatherholt has a hold on the Rookie of the Year lead or whatever it is, or Jordan Walker has 15, 20 home runs at the time, maybe. Say he has 20 home runs at the break, right? And the Cardinals go, okay, yep, no, we're in it for the long haul. And they trade, folks. I mean, if there's a – do you think there would be a backlash from the fan base? Do you think that would be somewhat like a, whoa, we supported this team. We fell in love with this team. We supported this team as it exceeded expectations. We rewarded its play by being there, by tuning in, by getting a subscription, by buying tickets. Now you've made this trade and we're back where we started. Now we feel like, why did we invest in this? What kind of message is that sending?
To me, it sends the message that they are staying true to who they are. Like, if there was a different message that had been sent in the offseason, and it's what it's been for the last 25 years here in St. Louis, and then they make those exact same moves at the deadline, that to me would deserve the scrutiny. That to me would deserve the, well, you guys said you were trying to win. Your team is winning, and now you're sending guys away. I don't understand why you're doing this. But Chaim Bloom has been very clear on what this season is and what it isn't and what their plans are and what they're trying to build towards. And if they decide it is in our best interest, not for 2026, but for 2027, 28, 29, and 2030, to trade Dustin May and or to trade Riley O'Brien to get somebody in return who can help us in those seasons more so than May or O'Brien would, then I think it would be more than understandable. And in my opinion, I think Cardinals fans would actually be in favor of them making those moves, because Cardinals fans, this fan base is smart, Derek, you know, yeah. That. And I think they understand what this team is. I think they know what this season is all about. And so long as the Cardinals are honest in their communication and they also relay what their plans are, and then they follow through with those plans, I think fans will be understanding of that. I think the disconnect really over the last few seasons has been they say one thing and then you see the actions and it's like, well, that doesn't meet your goals. That's not enough. You go out and you tell me you're going to bolster this rotation and you just bring back guys that didn't do it elsewhere or that aren't capable of doing what you're asking them to do here. So I think that's been the real disconnect between the front office and fan bases previous, or in this fan base previously. I think they have a chance to right that wrong by continuing along in the right path, in my opinion, this season.
Do you think they need to? Okay, so what would be the response to a solid performance from the team, though? Like, what would be an adequate either statement or action that, like, okay, look, this team has performed better than expected? What would be a way that the front office would acknowledge that while also staying true to the longer range goals?
It's really interesting because I am somebody that will constantly on our show say, listen to their actions, not their words, right?
Yeah,
because
absolutely,
the actions tell you everything. If you see them saying that a guy is performing well, doing all the right things, but they're not seeing the field, well, their actions are telling you maybe that's not exactly the way they actually feel behind the scenes. On this question, like, I actually think you kind of have to follow their words as much as their actions, because I'm not sure there's a way for them to do that, Derek, this season. With actions. I don't think you can reasonably ask them to go out there and acquire players at the deadline to bolster the roster, or ask them to stick with Dustin May and Riley O'Brien when they're going through this kind of a season. It's about discipline. And this is where, like, I have pushed back against Cardinals fans for years saying that they want this team to rebuild, because rebuilds suck. It's awful. It's an easy thing to say because you see what's at the other side of it. And you're like, man, I want to be like the Cubs. I want to be like the Astros. I want to have the success that these tanking teams were able to see on the other side of it. And that's when it's really fun. What you don't think of, I think, a lot of times as a fan is, yeah, but did you see the other 5 years where the Astros literally were not on television in Houston, did not draw a rating in Houston, because their team was so historically bad that ownership was like, yeah, it's not even important for us to have a TV network right now. Like, that's how bad it got there. And the Cardinals aren't there. They're not that kind of a tanking team, but that's what this kind of a season invites, is a lack of reinforcements, a lack of going out there into the front office, showing you we're with you. We believe in this team too. Because the reality is, I don't think they do. I don't think that was ever the expectation or the plan for 2026, personally.
So let me try to workshop this. So if we agree that they could say something, and I do, I think they could say something. I think they could also do something, but what they would do is high degree of difficulty, but we can get into that. Let's say this team is getting a favorable response from the fans. While they do need to stay true to their long haul, and they do have these assets that could fortify them for the years to come, one of the things that they could do is they could say, look, this team has outperformed expectations, so our long-range view, we're dialing it in a little bit. It's not a long-range view. It's a 2027 view. This team has earned that. We don't think that this group right now is ready to contend, even if it's above 500, around 500. But we're going to use our attempt, and we'll see if they can pull it off. But they could at least say on the front end, our attempt is to use the players and assets that we have in this market at the trade deadline to acquire people who will help us in 2027, and not say, well, down the road. And they can fudge that a lot of different ways, right? Like, they can acquire three guys from Class A and go, whoa. I said that the move would help us in 2027, not that the specific players would, because then coming out of lockout, you could use some of that depth. You could trade elsewhere. You could acquire the guy, whatever, right? Part of acquiring a bunch of pitchers for a system is also to be ready to trade them later, or trade someone else because you have that depth later. So it's all part of it, right? Like, but I wonder if, like, that would be messaging that would hit. That, like, hey, look, you've done well. Let's acknowledge that. Let's not say this was, you know, that the fate of this team was determined regardless of the standing. Let's be responsive to the standings. Let's be responsive to the fan support and say, we're dialing up those expectations. This rebuild is now focused on 2027.
I think that's a great way to put it. I always talk about how teams can get a head start on their offseason at the trade deadline.
Yes,
it doesn't just have to be for those 2 months, right? You can also make moves that impact your roster for the following year or years to come. And another place where you can do this, Derek, like, I go back to the 2023 season, and this is something that I will never get over, and it bothers me to this day. The Cardinals decided not to place waiver claims on pitchers that were made available basically for free. There was, yes, money attached to them, but pitchers like Lucas Giolito, Reynaldo Lopez, and Matt Moore, who were placed on waivers that year. And I think it was the Guardians who decided to pick up all of them. But the Cardinals had an opportunity, because it was a very bad team, to, in my opinion, get started in their offseason. Find out, hey, is there something here with especially Lucas Giolito and Matt Moore, who made a lot of sense for that team and made a lot of sense for their needs that offseason, to potentially get started on revamping the pitching staff, both in terms of the rotation and the bullpen. That is something that once again this season, if you get to that waiver deadline, you could be a team that says, you know what, we're taking chances on this. It's going to cost us a little bit of money. Yeah. It's going to require us to give that salary for the next month to this player, but we believe it's worth it because for the next month, we get on the job training of finding out, hey, can this guy help us in 2027?
Yeah, yeah.
Because if we can go about starting our offseason this way. And if not, whatever, it was, you know, $1 million and we let them go to the free agent market this offseason and we go our separate ways. But you get an opportunity that way as well. So whether it's the trade deadline or the waiver deadline, making moves like that, that are kind of on the margins to improve your roster that don't require you to give up significant assets, I could be in favor of that too.
There is another, and that it would be really, I like that idea a lot. And there's another element to that too at the trade deadline. And maybe this is actually more of a November thing, as odd as that sounds. And we'll see, because there's a lot of unknown with the expiration of the CBA and the lockout coming December 1st and the expectation of what the owners want to get. Will contracts be grandfathered in? Will there be some teams that are like, gosh, we don't want to be in a bind with a higher luxury tax, so we need to move on from some of these contracts in November? You know, the Cardinals will have such a small payroll, they won't even be within the same hemisphere of wherever the luxury tax is set. Maybe even atmosphere is a better way to put that. They're just going to be galactically away from it. So does that mean that they can be in a position if teams want to go, whoa, we might want to move some of these contracts? Is there a good player to get that way? And again, I don't know if that'll develop. We've seen stranger things happen as teams make, you know, preemptive moves ahead of a CBA to kind of shift their roster to be more nimble coming out of a new CBA or coming into, I guess, a new CBA. So what, you know, maybe there's that place where the Cardinals could position themselves to then take on maybe a salary, take on a bigger contract that would then be a quality player for 2027, which I think would be interesting, right? Like that would dial it up. That would accelerate. That would be a bit of a sugar rush for contention, and they could do that. Certainly they have the financial wherewithal to do that, whether they want to jump the market or make that trade and then offer up less prospects as a result of taking on that money. I think that'll be real interesting. You know, we won't know how teams are going to react until we start seeing it in that kind of that hothouse of November as the pressure starts to mount on teams and what they want to do with their rosters before the game shuts down.
To me, that's where the real test begins for this front office. Like that's where, if you're a fan, I don't know that the deadline is where you're going to really be judging where they're at right now. I think it's more of an offseason conversation, because at that point, if this team is as good as they currently appear to be with the young core, and you've developed, you know, JJ appears at that time to be a part of the core, and Walker appears, he suddenly hit his way into the core, and you already had Burleson and Herrera who potentially fit into that conversation, and Mason Wynn is in that conversation. All right, well, you now have the starting point. That's more than half of your lineup that you feel really good about. If you throw in, you know, like a star level player into that mix, you really can be in the conversation as a contender next year. Now, if you also then go to the market, whether it's free agent or trade, and you're able to get some pitching to bolster your rotation, now you're really starting to talk about a team that's closer to contention. But I think that's the next place where the Cardinals are going to have real ability to get this fan base excited, is by what the next face of the franchise, Matt Holliday, Nolan Arenado, the guy that they bring in to bolster this thing along with the homegrown talent. That's where I think they'll be judged based upon, because Derek, we talk about this a lot. You know, the Cardinals, they're this great team at the draft and develop model, right? They're very good at that. They have been for the entire time that I've been alive. It's something that I was always jealous of growing up, is how they would always find the next player that can come up and help their core. But something that I don't think gets talked about enough is how great they also are at supplementing that with outside talent and going out and getting the next guy that can bat third in their lineup and become a 25 to 30 home run hitter with an OPS over 800 every season. And that's the guy that they still need to go out there and get. It doesn't have to come this offseason, but I think that would go a long way in igniting this fan base once again to getting excited about Cardinals baseball.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, they're before the Cardinals kind of took their pivot into what do they call it, the reset, the final year of John Mozeliak as president of baseball operations, the gap year for Hein Bloom, whatever. The runway season. The runway season. So the runway season and the lead up to the runway season. So there towards the end of 2024, I was starting to poke around and I was like, okay, what would be a classic Cardinals move that would change the look of their team for 2025 in a way that would make them a contender. And so I started asking around and like talking to scouts and talking to agents and things like that, because obviously it was going to be a trade. It was going to be a free agent. And I also started like just in the back of my mind, I was like, I need to start really thinking, is that Brent Rooker? Is it Brent Rooker that is that guy? And you think about like where he was with the A's at that time. There was some unknown about what the A's were going to do. You know, were they going to go and try to build a team that fans wanted to come see in Sacramento, or were they going to kind of take this time and go, well, no one's going to come see us anyways, so let's downsize and then sling forward for when you get to Vegas, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of different ways. And I just looked at where he is in his contract, you know, where the A's might be in their cycle of contention. And I was like, I wonder if the A's would do a Walker for Rooker, you know, just that kind of move, and that how radically that would change the look of the Cardinals, you know, because he would be the guy and then you could extend him, right? And you would have a slightly older version of what you hoped Walker would be. And it would be the classic kind of trade and extend. And add someone in the middle of the lineup. Obviously, they went in a different direction completely. That was not on the horizon. They were going to focus inward. They were going to try to trade guys. They were not looking for that kind of deal. But you're totally right that like some point in time in the next 18 months, some kind of deal like that has to be kind of the finishing touch of this rebuild.
And it's an interesting time for it because there's a lot of teams that feel like they're kind of on the clock, so to speak. Like the Orioles need to win. That team needs to make good on this young core, or eventually you have to change the young core. The Boston Red Sox need to win. That fan base is growing tired of hearing it's coming. The winning will come. The winning will come. I mean, we can look no further than the guy that's now in charge of the Cardinals to see how quickly that can change for somebody in charge of the Boston Red Sox. You look at the Mets. This is a disaster what is happening for them right now. They have lost 11 consecutive games, and no, you can't make the playoffs in April. You sure can lose them, though. If you fall that far behind, especially in that division, it gets late early out there. And if that team falls completely out of contention again this season, and it's coming off of whatever last year was for them as well, maybe they are somebody that looks to pivot. I don't know what's going to happen with the Phillies this season, but it sure hasn't been a great start for them so far this year. The reason I'm bringing up all these teams, Derek, is because, man, if these teams get to the end of the season and it didn't go in their way and their fan base are calling for real tangible changes to their core, well, the Cardinals are the kind of team that could then swoop in and say, all right, we've got a different look for you. Here's X, Y, and Z that could be made available. Let's see if there's a deal to be made. And I think there are a lot of teams that are potentially at a pivotal point in their respective franchises, and that could set up pretty well timing-wise with where the Cardinals are at.
Yeah, and that's part of why they're accumulating such pitching. I mentioned it earlier, but to put like it more specifically, that's a big part of why they're accumulating pitching depth, is not just because they need to use it to get through a major league season, but the more pitching depth they have, the higher percent of top prospects or highly thought of prospects, or you know, just high ceiling stuff that they can have in the system, the better position they are to make those trades. I mean, you look no further than the kind of trades that the Cardinals are making, right? Look at, just flip them and think about what the Cardinals would offer to get that player in return. You know, that is actually on their mind is, all right, how do you build up this cachet of pitching depth so that then you can trade from it when the opportunity arises to go add that guy? And, you know, I think when you look at the Mets, you know, 11 in a row, they've lost, you know, Juan Soto's not in the lineup. He's injured. But they at least have their strong history of no drama and foundational support to really draw on. I think they really can lean into their tremendous history of stability and not overreacting to things. I think that's the Mets are, they just can't stop being the Mets. It's amazing. No matter how much money they spend, they're still the Mets. It's wild.
The thing that I find really interesting, like you've talked with David Stearns. He's a bright baseball mind. He's good at this. He did an excellent
former sports writer. So, you know, I mean, let's.
he's very good at this. And for whatever reason, he goes to New York and it just has not worked for him so far there. It's early. That could change next week, much less next year. Right. But I do find it kind of interesting. Like the one place that's really had, in my estimation, a lot of success trying to emulate somebody else, a different model, is basically the Dodgers, where the Dodgers took the Rays model, upscaled it, said, what if we took what the Rays are doing
and made it Apple?
And then also like had all of the money to support it and added in Shohei Ohtani. Like, what would that look like? You look across the rest of Major League Baseball, though, when a lot of these teams try that, whether it's the Rays model or the Guardians model or the Milwaukee Brewers model, which is what they're trying to do in New York now, it has not worked in most of those places. And that's something that I'm going to be really curious about to monitor here. What does that look like for Chaim Bloom in St. Louis? Because you can't just try to recreate something. And I think he's been really good about talking about this, saying he's not trying to, but you've got to kind of find your own way. Whatever that means for your organization, you've got to go in a new direction beyond just what you previously created somewhere else.
I think, you know, there's a real interesting element to what Bloom talks about and what we see examples of, both in what to continue the theme, both in what they say, but also in what they do. You know, by keeping so many members of the staff in his front office and by instead saying, no, I'm going to add to them, he was able to keep the continuity that DeWitt put such an emphasis on and that the Cardinals historically have felt they've drawn such strength from. He was able to keep that and then also like build around it. And that makes it different than these other places. You know, the Rays, they had to be innovative. It wasn't that they could say like, I mean, continuity was like a curse word. No, we can't continue to do the same thing. We have to constantly reinvent. The only continuity is that we can't have a big salary, right? Like, or big payroll. And the Dodgers, you know, I don't know if like, I mean, continuity of development is a real powerful thing there, but so is wildly strong investment in coaching and far more things that, you know, the areas where they're not capped in spending, they spend a bunch. And so they're able to do things and provide for players in ways that in young players, developing players, they're also able to just take on more to increase their odds. Now, every team is limited in the number of players that they can have on their rosters at any one time. This isn't the Branch Rickey farm system where you can just accumulate talent. But the Dodgers are able to cycle through a lot of talent. They're able to stash injured talent at high dollars. And they're also able to just, you know, overwhelm potential with a lot of development and coaching.
And on that note, just think about the Mookie trade, right? Like the reason the Mookie trade was possible is because of the money they took on with David Price.
Exactly. And that's not the only deal that they've done. Like, and then of course the Mookie extension. So it was like a double whammy, right? Like they did two things there that only three or four teams could do, and really only one could do in concert, right? And they were going to go sign Mookie probably as a free agent, or at least try if he ever got there. He didn't. So then they're like, well, we'll just do this and then do the Wild extension. I just think that, like, you bring up such an interesting point, because, like, originally the notion was like, okay, what if Heim Bloom brought the approach of the Tampa Bay Rays, the historical significance of the Boston Red Sox, to the spending power of a team, you know, of a smaller market team that has bigger spending power, that would be sort of the Venn diagram of the Cardinals. I think there's a little bit of a shift to that, because I don't think there's the copying per se. It's how do you take the scouting muscle and innovation of Tampa Bay and upscale that with the investment that the Cardinals are willing to make. And then now we'll see what that next step is from when it goes outside the organization. Does it mean that they spend a little bit beyond their market? Does it mean that they try to become a destination place again? Is that even possible? I don't know if it is possible, or what it will take for St. Louis to be a destination place. Certainly larger crowds. Certainly the atmosphere and the expectation that Nolan Arenado chased to be here, that has to be back, right, for it to be a destination place. So I don't know if so much the Cardinals are going to copy as much as maybe their strength is building upon what they already have done well and then borrowing from these different other places.
And the reason you can't copy, Derek, to put kind of my fine point on this, is because a big part of the Tampa Bay Rays model is that constant churn of the roster. Like, it's not just that they're great at developing pitching. It's that they will trade their pitching for four more pitchers, and you continuously do that churn to the point where, like, your five-man rotation, if you're the Rays, becomes 20 starters in the minor leagues, because you've traded all of those guys for new options that are similar to them in different ways. And if one of those four breaks and another one of them never becomes anything, and the third one is just a bullpen arm, and that fourth guy works out and he becomes a mid-rotation starter, and you do that for the entire rotation, well, I've just replaced my rotation despite half of them completely failing for me. And the Brewers do the same thing, where they will go out and they'll say, all right, Freddy Peralta, it's time to go. All right, Brandon Woodruff. All right, Corbin. Like, they consistently do this every offseason. And then we all say to ourselves, well, it's not going to work this time. And then it does. And they consistently churn through the roster. But I don't think that same thing works in St. Louis. I don't think that works in Boston. I don't think that works in New York. These fans become tied to their players. And it's about keeping your star talent here. And so in order to have a similar model, it requires more of that investment. It requires more of, like, you being right in the draft and then drafting and developing and signing and paying those players. So I just think it's something that does not get talked about enough in terms of what that model is, what it requires, and what it requires of fans to be willing to let go of those players that became stars for your respective team.
Yeah, if we look a few years down the road, or maybe even 2 years down the road, and the Cardinals jersey sales are Musial, Pujols, and Molina, that probably is a concern. If, you know, and that's actually a conversation that I had with David Stearns. He was talking to me. He told me that the smaller market teams have an edge over the bigger market teams because they don't offer the big contracts. It gives them more flexibility. They can go through the roster churn, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, man, how unromantic is that? Like, how discouraging is that? And I mean, I said this to him. I was like, imagine you're like an 8-year-old kid, and that's the selling point that you give them as a Cardinal fan. Hey, 8-year-old kid, you know, get a new jersey every Christmas because you're going to have a new player every Christmas. Like, what kind of selling point is that? You know, they don't have the star to latch on to. And, you know, while this seems idyllic at the time, but that was something that Mike Shannon told me, was like, every team has it, or every generation has its championship. Every generation has its star. And if you start going into the point that, like, all right, this generation's star, it's the City Connect jerseys. Congrats. It's the
GM, Derek. That's what it is. The star for a lot. No, like, I'm not saying this is a good thing, because it certainly does not get to that 8-year-old that you're talking about. But for these teams, Like the Tampa Bay Rays, the Milwaukee Brewers, the star is the general manager. That's what it has become for them. And I don't think
Brewers, now it's Pancake Man. It's the manager.
But that's what modern baseball has become in some of these markets. And to bring this full circle, that's why Jordan Walker is so important for the future of this team, because he has the talent to become that player.
Yeah.
He has the talent, the pedigree, everything, the personality, the playing style. He has everything to become that guy that started his career in a Cardinals uniform, ends his career in a Cardinals uniform, and has the ability to become that 30 home run, 100 RBI guy that Cardinals fans have grown up with for the last, 100 years. And he's got that in there somewhere. They've just got to make sure they extract it.
And how many 18 jerseys there are then in the crowd, and what's the next number that they add to that group? 26, 41, 0. But who's the outside number that then moves merch? That'll tell you when they're ready to contend. Very interesting. All right. Well, last question for you. And it should be easy to answer. So it's all the rave right now to do these rookie extensions. You do one for Weatherholt, given all that's what's been the tone of your conversation at 101 ESPN on this topic? I talked to Haim about it. I brought it up to Weatherholt. They were obviously both cagey. There's a lot more circumstance for the Cardinals than what's going on elsewhere. And while a few contracts have gotten a lot of attention, there are a lot more young players who haven't gotten these contracts. So we need to keep that in context. But what's your feel on that?
Man, my feel is not a popular one. I do not think they should do this. I do not think it would be a wise decision to do so. It would be fun. And you mentioned, what are some things that the Cardinals could do that would make the Cardinals fans believers in all of this? Signing JJ Weatherholt would be one of those things.
Interesting.
I do not, though, think from a business perspective, it would be a smart move. They already have his 20s locked up because of the way that the current baseball structure is in place. Mm-hmm. Through the arbitration system, they have his 20s ready to go. And those are the prime years for a Major League Baseball player. Meanwhile, you look up in Pittsburgh, and one of the reasons why they were incentivized to do this is because their best prospect is 19 years old. And so in order to get those late 20s seasons, mm-hmm. where he's going to be in his prime, they had to sign a contract extension to keep him under their control for those years. That same thing, that same situation does not exist for Weatherholt because he's already 23 years old right now and will be 24 by the end of this season. So I don't think the same circumstances are in place here. They've basically got him locked up for like $1 million the next 3 years. And then even if he's really, really good, Derek, $5, $10, and $20 million in the arbitration system, most likely. So you're looking at like a 6 year, 40-ish million dollar contract right now. Some of the deals that we've seen given out are like 9 and 140. So you would need him to be worth, in order to make that worth your while, about 3 years and 100-ish million dollars to make it worth your while if you're the Cardinals on the back end of that deal when he's in his age 30, 31, 32 seasons. I just don't see that as being necessary right now. I know it's not the fun opinion to have, but from a pure business perspective, I think it would be a bit of a mistake unless they're able to get it for much cheaper and they know something that we don't know about the way that the new CBA is going to be structured. Those would be the two things
which
that
they
would
don't.
Change.
Yeah, exactly. Which they don't. Yeah, no one does. Not even the union or the owners. I mean, I think you make a great point. I mean, look, if he's going to make that kind of money, it'll still be there when he's that age and the production will have been there as a tailwind. That's part of this too. When the Cardinals look at it, they're like, well, keep him around for his career. That offer will be there, but so will the production that is the trampoline into that offer. I think it's a real interesting element, the PR aspect, as we've talked about here, what moves they make, what message it sends, what extension they sign, when they do it, all those things will have definitely a PR element. The Cardinals' performance makes this all the more fascinating, BK. I think it'll be really interesting to see how, if it holds, even if it's only, again, around 500, five games above like they are now, if this holds, what they do and how they respond to it. Do they keep their eye on the rebuild ball? Do they feel they need to do some PR moment? I think it'll be really interesting.
It's going to be a really fun season to monitor. And the start of the season makes it that much more interesting.
Yes, absolutely.
The fact that they have been productive. They have won five games in a row. They're winning games in interesting ways. Like they're coming back in these games. They're putting up significant runs. Jordan Walker's renaissance this season. Like, all of this stuff is combining to make it a far more interesting season than even I had anticipated. But that's Cardinals baseball, man. It's never lacking for interest. That's never lacking for interest.
That's Brandon Kiley, co-host of BK and Ferrario at 101 ESPN, also part of the Redbird Report podcast there at 101 ESPN in St. Louis. I get to join him on the show, BK and Ferrario, every Tuesday this year. That's a midday show, so I'm really looking forward to it. Our conversations are not quite as long on those hits as they are here. But this has been great. BK, thank you so much for joining me. We could go on for another couple hours, I feel like, because we didn't even get into some of the minor league stuff going on. So, you know, it's a lot. We'll have to have you back. We'll do an encore if you're
deal.
Up for it.
And we'll do a home and home. We'll get you on the Redbird Report here soon as well. Thanks for having me, Derek.
That. Yeah, you bet. Brandon Kiley, available. You can find him 101 ESPN. Listen to his midday show. The best podcast in baseball is available wherever you get your podcasts. It's there on iTunes, Spotify, all of it. You can get the best podcast in baseball also at stltoday.com, home of all of the constant Cardinals coverage. Daniel Guerrero was the only legal beat writer there or in Houston with the St. Louis Cardinals, providing coverage for subscribers. So look for all of his work there at stltoday.com. The best podcast in baseball really does try to be weekly. I'm going to get it going here. I promise. It's brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Brandon, thank you so much, man. I know you got a show to do, so look forward to it, man. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Same to you, Derek. Thanks for having me.